One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Is going on, everybody, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and of course, as always, mi amigo, joining me up today, Mr. Filio, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, folks? Yes, I'm sitting here in beautiful Skeleton Studios. If you hear any noises,
it's wild,
like,
right?
I don't know what's going on outside. Neighbors. I heard somebody doing dentistry. I heard a dog barking. Maybe someone's performing dentistry on the dog. I don't know.
I noticed when I walked up that there is a Great Dane next door that looks like somebody has out walking around. And he seems to be a little more worked up than normal at other people coming by. Like, he's really fired up. I don't know what's going on. And then you're right. I keep hearing something. It sounds like, I can't tell if it's it sounds like an air compressor, but it sounds like they are doing dentistry on something.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it sounds like. You're like, what
is
going
happening?
On? Start having flashbacks, you know, people drilling on your teeth.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So if you hear something crazy, that's the craziness that's going on around this place. First and foremost, huge shout out to all those up there at Shirley Hall Middle School. We know you're there. We know you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We know you're there. So, yeah, we got some friends that listen up through there. Look, we got people listening all over. We got to watch our P's and our Q's. So, folks, this one is going to be another OTC. We're going to have some fun. We got a lot of stuff to discuss, some funny things that have happened, some crazy things that have happened. We got some cool stuff sent to us to discuss. It's just going to be fun. This is just a good, relaxing show. We've got some interviews coming out soon, next week. And so, yeah, we just have.
Yeah.
It's been busy. And then, of course, you have been locked away yet again for all your classes again, which mine are coming up. But,
man.
Yeah.
I know this is first world problems, but like, yeah, every 2 years I have to do continuing education. I wait until like the last 4 weeks to do it. And it's just a beating because not only do I have to take time away from my family and
that's not what you miss.
I'm trying to make it sound good. Yeah, I have to do these courses, which are basically just made up. I mean, it doesn't teach you anything. Like I told you today, it's like a reading comprehension test.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with my profession. Reading about Bernie Madoff and how he defrauded all these white collar people, these rich white collar people out of money. I'm like, yeah, it's a sad story. What does that have to do with my license? How does that help me in any way? It doesn't.
No.
But I did help somebody because I lined somebody's pocket with like $519 to take these courses. Yeah.
That you have to have.
Every 2 years.
To keep your license.
Yeah, or you don't get your license. They hold it over you. And it's getting stricter. Like now you have to do like a background check and fingerprints and all. You have to join something called the FBI. What is it called? Rap back or something? I don't know. They check your rap sheet or something. Luckily, I still escaped the law. The long arm of the law hasn't caught up to Freedom Filson.
You mean convicted? Nah, man, I've never been convicted.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm okay there. But, yeah, I've been doing that. My father-in-law is in the hospital. He's not feeling well. Let's see what else is going on. We have our first baseball tournament this weekend. We've got a new team pretty much, so I don't know how that's going to go.
That may be a little sketchy. We'll see how that works out.
You never know. Sometimes, you know, the practice doesn't look like it's going too well. The kids don't look like they're paying attention. Then the game comes and they're lights out. I've had it happen the opposite. We're like, man, we are going to destroy them this weekend. Then you get to the game and
they don't
just
show
worried
up.
About a new skin that came out on Fortnite or whatever. They could care less. See, that's the thing. As an adult, you get wrapped up in it and then you have to realize they're still 12.
Yeah.
Like to them, they just... they don't care.
Well, and you also have seen it enough to where if the team is 50-50 and some have played together and some haven't, it takes a little while sometimes for them to gel. So it takes a few good games of them really going into it before they really start working together and getting used to it, like anything else.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not looking just for wins. It's about, you know, playing team sports teaches a young person a lot. Teaches you about how to lose, how to win.
Anyway, we're looking for wins. So that's what we're doing here.
Accountability.
If you're not first, you're last.
You have to admit when you screw up. Like, yeah, we lost, guys, because of me. It was me. I had to do a lot of that growing up.
What do you mean growing up? I still do it.
Right? Yeah. Oh, man, first
that's
off.
That's all me.
Speaking of tragedies, I got a shout out to all the people in Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
Saw where the tornadoes came through there, and I think there's at least 25 confirmed dead.
That's awful.
Terrible. Man, we live right here in Tornado Alley, and it is just about to start.
Yeah.
And they are scary.
They're monsters.
What's shocking to me is, like, it's a law that you have to have, like, a seatbelt on, and there's all these laws, but, like, wouldn't it make sense that you had to have a law to have, like, a storm cellar? They're not that expensive. I mean, you know, from the business I'm in, you can get, like, a concrete one for, like, $2,000.
I would like to have one, but I want one buried.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, you just
because there's a lot of them now that'll do them. Yeah, they like make them like a safe room.
Yeah,
in their
they
house.
Do that. Those. Yeah,
but I remember seeing that on when they were wiping slabs and all. Like, you can still get F5s. Will just laugh at that. And the next thing you know is you wake up someplace different. So
I'm with you. I'd want one in the ground.
Yeah,
and I'm talking about like for a $2,000 one is pretty small.
I want. You don't need a big one. You're just hiding. You're not living.
Some people want to do it fancy, like
only in America.
You got to put your. You got to have your food down there when you're prepping.
I have a closet at my house that has a fire pole in the back, and it goes down into three welded together 55-gallon drums buried in the ground. It's only big enough for me because I'm the only one worth saving. So I just jump in and fire pole it down to the barrel and close the lid and just wait for it to pass.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I went and shot a 3D tournament this past weekend, all traditional.
Now, explain to people overseas and stuff that may not know what a 3D tournament is.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You're just you got to assume somebody's like, what's that?
Yeah, I have no clue. I got you. Okay, 3D. So the tournament I was involved in was the traditional bow hunters of Texas. So it was all trad bows. So that means no compounds. It doesn't have the wheels on the ends. It is just a bent piece of wood. So that's the bows that I have. And a 3D tournament is a tournament that you go and shoot foam targets that are replicas of animals.
Right.
So there may be, they were hyenas were out there. They were some hyenas. They were jaguars. They were mountain lions, warthogs, pigs, bear, deer, whitetail, mule deer. There was some pronghorn antelope, mouflon ram. They didn't have their dinosaurs out. Remember the one I was sending you pictures over there?
Yeah,
they had a duckbill. They didn't have those out. They had a buffalo, a mountain goat.
And so you go from station to station. It's kind of like a round of golf.
It's just, they have a numbered area. And, of course, the way it's set up, you're never shooting towards anybody. It's all out in the woods. You walk up to this numbered area, and it has different colored stakes. Now, most of the time, they drive like a metal stake in the ground, and they cover it with colored PVC. So it may be white, blue, red, yellow. It just depends. And other 3D shoots where they'll involve everybody. They involve compounds and traditional bows and all age groups and, I mean, everything, men and women, kids, the whole deal. But in this, of course, there was only like three different classes, I think. And it depended on like the kids, the ladies, and the men's tees is basically how you look at it in this trad bow thing. But it's unknown yardage. The furthest yardage with the trad bow is 25 yards in these tournaments most of the time. Now, we did have one target that was 50 yards, a foam buffalo, and it was more of a fun shoot for that. But so you walk up, and they have scoring rings for like a, and it's all different. And you can get the hair splitting down to like different groups. It's ASA. There's all these different archery groups, but for the most part, to keep it simple, is there's a 10 ring. And then there's an 8 ring, and then anything in the foam animal period's a 5 outside of the 8 ring. But in the center of the 10 ring is a small little ring, about as, depending on the size of the animal, it's usually, you know, they follow a certain size. And that's for 12 points, dead center of the 10.
So the smaller the foam animal is, like if you're shooting a replica of a raccoon, it's a much smaller 12 ring is much smaller than on, say, a moose.
And it's also, let's point this out, that it's not always atomically correct of where they would put some of these scoring. For the most part, they are, but not always 100%. So it's just there to give you a good practice, and it's fun. And like I said, you can miss. And the good thing about a trad bow is you don't usually, they don't go too far if you miss and all that. So we went and shot that. Me and my son went over there and shot and met up some other guys. And there was probably, man, I bet there was 50 of us, 50 or 60 of us on there the first day. And then I didn't go back the next day because it, you know, it's a 2-day shoot. You can shoot either day and all this. But anyway, we had a blast running around over there doing it. The weather was great. It's good times. You realize how tired you get when you don't have a let off. So the let off, like in a compound bow, when you draw back, a percentage of it breaks away. So you're only holding usually 30% of the weight that you have the bow set on. Whereas when you shoot a traditional bow, it's just bending those wooden limbs. So you're holding all the weight. As you draw, it gets stronger and stronger till you get it to your anchor point on that whole deal. But yeah, so I got to shoot a bunch of archery this weekend and pretty much just had a great time running around slinging sticks.
You said the weather was perfect. So
it was amazing. And then I think we're going to try to get down to Waco next week for a day. Yeah. You and I are talking about running down there to go watch a little disc golf. We've been talking about it for the last few years of taking off, and he and I are running to watch a round of disc golf played by the pros. So I think we're going to make a trip to Waco and actually follow through with this time.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
It'll be a good time.
And you met up with one of the guys from the Seven Ages Research.
I did.
Associates.
I got to hang out last week with the man himself, James Waldo. We got to have a few drinks and hang out over there in Funky Town. He was down here for business and hit us up. And of course, you with those damn classes. So then I got to run over there. So me and Waldo hung out and had a few drinks and just laughed and chatted about everything and the whole deal. And it was great to finally get to, you know, we've talked to him and we send messages back and forth to each other. But to actually get to sit down and to have a drink and just hang out was fun.
Yeah, very cool. Well, hey.
Yeah.
People are tired of hearing what we're doing. Let's talk about them. Let's get into some cryptid sightings or some crazy news stories. Do you want to go first?
I've got one. This is what I want to talk about. So with everything going on with the coronavirus and the media doing what they do and everybody getting all worked up about
it,
I was looking at if the coronavirus could affect any of our cryptid friends over in China. We don't need things in China, our cryptid buddies, to end up getting sick and dying too. So I had to look them all up here. This takes place in March of 1955, one evening in Hong Kong, China.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. This isn't a Jimmykin, is it?
No. This is called the Hairy Beast.
Okay.
It says the doors were barred in Hong Kong as the police searched for a hairy beast, said by terrified residents to be a shaggy animal over 6 foot tall. One man, a village gardener named Law Chu, had fought it and lived. That's right.
In the city of Hong Kong.
He
was walking around.
He got to put his hands on this thing. Says the thing attacked him about 50 yards from the family temple. It was covered with long, shaggy gray hair. It stood upright when it came at him. He punched it in the stomach, and the creature fell on him, and they grappled for some time.
Whoa.
Yeah, the creature then went away, loping on all fours. Sometime after that, a woman saw a strange animal galloping past her vegetable garden on all fours. And as of proof that she exhibited large triangular footprints there through her vegetable garden. Or in
triangular.
The dirt. Yes. Said they were unlike those made by man or by ape.
Yeah.
So we have a hairy beast fist fight from 1955. Now here's something else that was going down strange out in that area. This is in Pingwu in the Sichuan province of China in March 7th of 1987.
I think I got that at P.F. Chang's one time.
I knew this was coming. At midnight, a family of three, including a young child, was awakened by a loud, high-pitched hum coming from outside their small home. Now, all three went outside to investigate and were nearly blinded by a beam of yellowish light coming from a huge huge, reddish-orange object shaped like a straw hat that hovered above them and slowly spun. The hum grew louder, and all three had a strange floating sensation and blacked out. Now, you ready? This is where it gets worse. They all woke up and found themselves strapped to three steel tables in a circular room.
Yeah, that's not good.
The woman began screaming, then a tiny hatchway opened in the wall, and five, not one, not two, folks, but three, four, five, 3 foot tall humanoid creatures stepped into the room. They were human in shape, but with featureless faces and with three huge whitish eyes on their foreheads.
Three wide eyes?
Huge whitish eyes.
Oh, my bad.
Huge whitish eyes. There's a lot of sizes and a lot of numbers in this one. Their skin appeared transparent and bluish in color. Well, which one was it? The creatures said nothing as they proceeded to remove blood from the arms of all three abductees. They then inserted long needles into their knees and ankle joints. The husband and the child appeared to have been in a trance-like state during the incident. Electrode-like devices were taped to their skulls, and the woman was, able to hear the loud, high-pitched hum that they initially heard outside of their home. One of the beings made an incision on the child's thigh that was immediately healed by a pencil-like device that they passed over it. Moments later, the room became dark and everything began spinning. Their next conscious memory was walking on a roadside 7 miles from their home.
What? So they put a tracker in the kid.
That's what it sounds like.
And then the father sounds like he had a really intense, like, ping pong game later today, and they just shot some cortisone in his knees and ankles.
First of all, dude, you got to stop with that. You can't. What? That's so disrespectful.
That sounds like doping. That sounds just like they do in the NFL, like, every weekend.
Unless you're draining fluid off your knee, you don't need to have a needle stuck in it. And you definitely don't need to have it stuck in your ankle. Like, no. That sounds awful.
Helping him out. Maybe he was plowing fields or something, working manual labor, and he was having pain, and they were somehow able to detect, like, golly, this guy's got some bad arthritis in his knees and ankles. Let's just hook him up with this miracle gel we got here in our space syringe.
Some in my ankles right now, for real, for real.
Right? I mean, maybe it wasn't sinister. People always assume they're up to no good or evil. Maybe they were helping them.
What do you think? They're flying EMTs? I don't think so, dude.
Maybe, like, all the stories from the Bible about angels and stuff, it's extraterrestrials. They come down here and do good deeds.
I've never read a story where an angel anally probes somebody.
Well, that didn't happen in this story. They were helping these people out. Now, there are some stories, yeah.
Your story. Anyhow, listen to this. Gobi Desert in Outer Mongolia, China in 1982. All right.
Okay.
Chinese military units accidentally stumbled upon a crashed alien spacecraft in this isolated desert region. A retrieval team was summoned and the site properly cordoned off. Everything possible was done to avoid any information leaked to civilians and to other Chinese military sections. Yet here we are. The craft was slightly damaged and abandoned by its crew. Now, how would you like to find a crashed spacecraft, but you could tell where the crew had got out and ran off? Now you're like, oh, lovely.
That would be pretty cool.
It was about 10 meters long and about 2.5 to 3 meters in diameter. The shape was cylindrical with a very durable surface. Sophisticated equipment apparently used by alien entities were found inside the cabin with chairs for two or three entities. The cylinder was loaded upon a platform on a flatbed truck or railroad carriage, and moved to a much more secure underground government research installation in a military range southwest of Beijing under the Taihang Shan Mountains. The alien spacecraft was subjected to extensive study and research. Another UFO, which crashed in 1973, was also stored at this site.
Now, how do they know it was an extraterrestrial vehicle? Like, how do they know it wasn't just, like, some top secret military craft they were experimenting with?
They don't, but I'm assuming probably because somebody dropped their driver's license in there or something like that, and they picked it up and were like, oh, they're not from around here.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe from the riding.
I always picture, like, those guys out, those Mongolian guys with those golden eagles they have.
Yes.
They can use falconry and they deploy one of those. I bet those could probably pick up a gray.
Oh, those things are huge. Sure.
Like, you sent me that one. You texted me a picture of the talons.
Oh, yes. On the one? Yeah. What do you think about that, right?
I mean, I picture a gray like the size of Luke. I mean, that thing could pick him up, no problem.
Oh, that thing could grab Luke and take off like he wasn't even there.
Yeah. So there's a lot of strange stuff going on.
That's just scratching the surface. When you get into China, of course, you've also got to remember this. They do a real good job of keeping foreigners out. Like, you don't get to find out about a lot of the stuff. I do remember reading back after we'd started the show about the number of what they believe is in certain areas, you'll see a number of pyramids in China.
Oh, I've read about
those. Where they've grown up. They say there's over 200.
They're covered like in foliage and stuff now. So, but from the air, dude, it looks like a pyramid. Well,
they even look them out in the field. You can tell they look like big humps, but they still resemble pyramids. And they say, yeah, there are pyramids under that soil. And they've tried to uncover them. They've tried to really dig in and research and study it all. And the Chinese won't go for it. And they said, China's been here for X amount of years. You know, all these thousands of years. They're like, it'll be here forever. We'll study it when we finally get to it. Like, they're not in any hurry.
Yeah.
And you just have to think about, like, what all is in there? Like, we don't know. There may be the answers to a lot of things that we need to find out that's over in there. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. But also, this is the home for Yeren. This is the home for dragons. We see dragons, you know, like the Wu Dog stuff. It looks like a dragon that you see. There's all kinds of things that happen.
The Jimikin.
Exactly. Oh, that human faced dog, that bothers me.
That's one of my favorite cryptids of all time.
Yeah. So anyway, look, there's a bunch more. There's a bunch of wild stuff. I need to dig more into it. But China has a lot of things to offer on the cryptid, the alien side, the strange side, way, way more than coronavirus.
Well, and like when we were talking about Bob Lazar, when he was speaking about how at least the United States, where he was working in S4, they had 9 craft. It doesn't mean may have more than that at other facilities, you know, where he wasn't working. But he mentioned in his interview that at least some of these were ancient, like they were found in archaeological digs. So if we have that many, obviously we're not the only people on the planet that are lucky enough to find them. That's another question I've had, is how do they know where to locate these things? I would imagine that other countries like China, Russia, Brazil, you know, all these other countries, that they may have found their own versions.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of like a poker game where you don't really want to divulge what you've been able to figure out about the craft because you're afraid to share that information with another, because then they're like, oh, well, that's the missing piece we've been looking for. Now we can operate these things 100%. So it's very interesting,
like, to everybody's got just a few pieces or a few parts of the key or a little bit of the whole they'd all have to get together to make it work, and they're never going to do that.
And I don't know what it is about these stories, but to me it's like romantic, these stories in your mind where somebody finds a crashed saucer, they take it to a secret base, and there's these scientists doing secret experiments. I guess it's probably from all the movies, right? Like Close Encounter of the Third Kind or Independence Day. Remember when they got the freak show and they got the aquariums with like the aliens in there?
That's 100% what it is.
I hope it's that. I hope it's like that. I really do. I hope it's like that, because that would be awesome.
It's your Indiana Jones gene is what it is, that you want that kind of stuff to be real.
Yeah.
And that's the way it needs to be. But I'm with you. I like to believe it's that way.
Well, you were speaking earlier about this hairy creature that ran off on all fours that was in Hong Kong, the guy got a tussle with.
Yeah.
Speaking of hairy creatures, this did not take place there in China. It took place in Wisconsin back in September 1978. This person writes in and says, I lived with my father on a farm in the vicinity of Shawano, Wisconsin, which is very near the Menominee Indian Reservation. Yeah, we're going to go with that.
Where was that at again?
The Menominee Indian Reservation.
Menominee.
There had been some buzz within the community of an unknown large hairy creature spotted by 2 deer hunters not far from our farm. I had heard these stories of the Manabiwak, or the hairy giants, from stories told by the Menominee.
Where?
I can't say that word. Menominee? But I just considered these tales to be only legends. Then, one evening, my father and I were coming home from the store and noticed what appeared to be 2 hairy creatures, get this, Cam, collecting squash from our garden. Each creature was at least 6 foot tall, making them huge.
Squash gathering son of a gun.
Sasquash.
Sasquash.
It was dusk, but there was enough light to clearly see what they were doing.
That's what they made. They were making Sasquash.
And they just like to collect gourds. You know, they put some rocks in there and they dry them out and they put them in the trees by their den.
You don't like slow cooked squash and zucchinis?
I like squash. I like playing squash. I like eating squash. I mean,
I like hunting for Sasquash.
Yeah. Who don't? Anyways, my father immediately cut the headlights, stopped the cars. We just sat there and watched them pick up and eat the squash. They didn't even seem to notice us, even though we were only about 100 feet from them. After about 5 minutes, one of the creatures looked in our direction, and you could see its eyes glow red from the light of the moon. We started to get scared at this point, decided to make a dash for the house and call the police. Then suddenly, a huge disc-shaped object appeared above us, slowly moved towards the east field, which is about 200 yards from us, and landed. I estimate the craft was about 40 feet in diameter. A large sliding door opened, and after a few seconds, the door closed and the craft slowly rose and shot off towards the north. Now, I almost forgot. While the door was open, it looked like a foggy green light glowed from within inside the craft. Then we noticed, when we turned our attention back to the squash-collecting Sasquatch, that the creatures were gone. Now, a few days later, our neighbors from down the road came over for dinner. After we finished eating, my father and his friend, Mr. Kane, walked outside. And after an hour or so, the neighbors left and I started to clean up the kitchen. Later that evening, I was watching television in the living room. My father walked in, turned off the TV, and sat down beside me. He told me that Mr. Kane and his sister witnessed one of the craft on the same night that we had our encounter, as well as witnessed several of these large hairy creatures meandering in the nearby woods. Mr. Kane said that he knew something had been in the woods for several weeks, but never got a good look at it or the craft until it arrived that evening. After that night, we never had another encounter, nor did we hear of more sightings by any other people in the area. I wonder, do you think these creatures might have been Bigfoot? Were they aliens? Or are they one and the same? It always seems strange to me that a Bigfoot body has never been found. Is it a possibility that Bigfoot is actually an extraterrestrial being? D. So what do you think of that?
Yes, out here on the farm, Bigfoot is an extraterrestrial being.
Out in the woods, collecting things for weeks, one neighbor doesn't want to tell the other neighbor. I mean, I could totally get that.
I totally understand that, because you don't want your neighbors to think you're out of your mind.
Yeah. I can remember when I was growing up, as a little boy, my mother told me that one of our neighbors, now when I say neighbors, we didn't live in the suburb, we lived in the country. So when I say a neighbor, they might be a half a mile or a mile even away, right? But mm-hmm. You still had neighbors. My mother told me that, do you remember, did you ever meet the Ellis's, Mr. Ellis?
Yes. Yep.
Well, his wife passed before him. But my mother told me when I was about 10, I guess, and I don't even know why she told me this. I don't know if we were watching a movie.
That she killed her?
No. That I had some bad dreams, or I don't remember, but I remember being outside. My mom was like, "Hey, see that open field right over there?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Do you know that Mrs. Ellis told me one night that she awoke to some crazy lights and stuff, and she saw like a craft land in that field?" And I was like, "No."
And you didn't want to hear that, did you?
No, I didn't like it.
You're like, "Thanks, Mom. I had a problem sleeping already. Now you're going to go ahead and lay this on
me." No, but that's a true story.
Appreciate you.
Now, I don't know if the old woman really saw that, or I don't know, but she told my mother that, and my mother told me when I was a kid. I need to ask my mom about that. I haven't brought that up. I haven't even thought about it till just when I was reading that story. But what do you, I mean, just like that, you got to be careful who you talk about these things to, if you actually did see something. But I can't imagine just watching these Sasquatch raid your garden. Can you imagine if these things flew?
Getting your squash?
Yeah, who knew that, like, not only are Bigfoot, are they really fans of squash? Do they fly, you know, through interstellar space and land on Earth and just harvest squash from people's gardens. And they're smart enough to be like, look, we're not going to take all of them. Let's just take like 7 or 8 from this guy. We'll go on down the road. We'll land there, get 6 or 7, 8. And this is like a stopping point. Like Bigfoot from all over the galaxy go, man, you got to stop by. It's like going to Heim Barbecue. You got to be like, man, you got to go to Earth.
It's like going to Bucky's.
The squash down there. I'm telling you. Off the chain.
Why couldn't it be that way? Why couldn't it be like, hey, look, you got to go by there. Now, granted, look, they're crazy. They're going to shoot at you. Like, it's a little, like, they are truly backwoods planet is what this is.
I'm that way.
But they have some of the best food down there. Like, you got to get down there and try some of that.
I'm that way. I mean, there is a...
We need to make a movie. That's a great movie premise. That would be amazing. If that's, like, they get shot down. We need a spacecraft with aliens and Bigfoot on it. They get shot down on the planet, and all they were there to do is to gather produce, just to get awesome fruits and vegetables is all they were coming for.
I mean, when you think about it in that way, there's a rundown, nasty, bad gas station in a really bad part of town in Fort Worth. But that place, they have a little old griddle in the back, and they got these two small Mexican ladies, and they make the best breakfast burritos that you can get. And it's a bad part of town, but it, look. I risk it going in there
for the biscuit
because I got to get that breakfast burrito. So I could imagine that Sasquatch are the same way, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
The Earth is a dangerous place. They know that we take shots at them and things like that, but they're willing to risk it for squash.
I think so.
You know, I read a thing, and we maybe even talked about it, that one time they were polling like 300 or 400 people, and they're asking, if you saw a UFO, what would you do? And they said like 80% of the people's first thing they said was they would shoot at it. Like, what is it about people like, I don't know what that is. Shoot it.
Let one fly.
Let's open fire on the thing.
Yeah.
I don't.
Not the best idea.
Yeah. I don't know.
Only on Earth. Like, why are we shooting? They've traveled light years to be shot at. People be like, get out of here.
Well, that's one of the theories why they say that, you know, they've been visiting Earth for a long time. And the reason they're staying secret. It's not because they're sinister or anything like that, that they're probably terrified because the first thing we do, there's going to be somebody trying to shoot one.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it from a trophy hunter's point of view. You got all these animals, these exotics, trophies on your wall. You've been to New Zealand. You've been to Africa. You've been to South America.
What, you want to kill an alien gray?
Not me. I'm saying a trophy hunter, serious trophy hunter. I mean, you don't think that they would be like, look, man, the these things are here. I got to bag me one of them.
That's why the Glimmer Man's here.
Maybe.
It's the Predator, and it's here waiting for those other aliens to get here. It's hunting Bigfoot. It's trying to kill the alien grays. It's trying to get it some reptilians and some mantis and beings. It's trying to get like a Mothman. The Predator's trying to wrap them all up.
I always like those stories. I like that story idea from the movie, that it's like an intergalactic hunt trophy hunter.
Yeah. It's crazy. Well, I got a story that you're not going to like that I wish the Predator would come and take care of. This just happened, or was actually posted just about a week or so ago. Lon posted this up about black-eyed kids. Now, this is going to be disturbing. He recently received this account, and I think y'all are going to like it. It says, I was walking around Toronto by a subway station, not saying which one for privacy reasons, and I saw a boy that looked about 14 or 15, wearing a navy blue hoodie and some bleached jeans. He seems like a typical kid, but it is winter now, and it was very windy and a cool day, so a hoodie and jeans don't really cut it. I walked into the subway station, and he was going the same way I was. Not suspicious, because many people ride TTC. I guess, what is that, some sort of like Toronto subway or something? And it only started getting suspicious when he seemed to keep burying his face in a book. It was a green covered book that had no title on it, almost like a school book. He got on the same subway car that I did, and the entire time kept his head in the book. Now, the subway car was relatively empty, maybe only 4 or 5 people. When I got off of the subway, he did too. Still, not really suspicious. The only thing strange is that he never let his head up from the book. Now, until we finally... Of course, it says here, we got out of the station. That's when he closed his book and held it in his left arm. I walked to the store that I was going to, which was semi-close, but still about 7 minutes of walking. For about 3 minutes or so, he followed me, eventually in an alleyway that was dark enough that I could not see faces. I was taking a shortcut, and that's when he lifted his pace. I was scared because we were alone. I thought maybe he wanted his friends, you know, or he wanted to be friends, rather, so I stopped walking, and so did he. I said, "Yes?" He only responded after about a minute of silence and said, "Can I go home with you?" I answered with, "Sorry, but I'm not going home. I'm going to the store. And also, I don't live here. I'm going to a relative's house on my way home, and it's back in the suburbs." He answered with, "Can I go there with you?" I simply said, "Why? Are you hurt? Are you homeless?" All he said was, "No, I just want to go." Then he approached me, and I noticed once my eyes adjusted that his eyes seemed dark. I thought, well, maybe it was just the shadows. But I'm very nervous, and I get a little anxiety, so I thought, well, might as well confirm my superstition. I turned my phone on for a second so that the light from it let me see his face. He quickly covered his face with his hands, but in the time that it was exposed, I saw dark eyes, and he backed away nervously. I bolted for the store, and he kept backing off. I took my cross necklace, thank God I was wearing it, I rarely do, and I held it in my hand as I ran. I prayed as I sprinted. Thankfully, I made it safely. I wish this story was fake. That image remains in my mind so freakish.
Man. Black-eyed kid sighting.
Exactly. Then there's, get a load of this. Here's you another one. It was just after Christmas in 2015, and I stopped around 12:30 in the morning for gas, but needed to use the restroom and grab some coffee. After filling up, I walked into the main building and took care of things. When I left, I was maybe halfway to the gas station part of the property when two kids approached me. They wore jeans and hoodies, no gloves, boots, or anything else. Now, please keep this in mind. I'm 6'5", 360 pounds. But even I was wearing a coat, so it was cold. They approached me and asked if they could sit in my truck with me. When I asked why, they said they were cold. I asked why they didn't go back into the 24-hour rest station. They didn't respond until they asked if they could stay in my truck again. One was maybe 14 or 15, the other maybe 10 or 12. Although I don't know if they were both if they were boys or girls, I assumed for them both to be boys. Their eyes were dark, and everything about them seemed dark, strange, and otherwise just unpleasant. I shook my head and walked back to my truck, but turned back after 5 or 10 steps, and I didn't see them anywhere. Now, this location is well lit, and you can see into the building easily. I have no idea where they disappeared to. AF. Now, there's another one here that says, now this is from JL. JL writes, "I once worked at a nonprofit, being the program assistant for a drop-in day center for homeless families. My boss was fired and replaced by a real pain in the butt. This woman was horrible. So much, in fact, I sat in a meeting with her boss, the director." So it says, "As I am walking towards his office, I was thinking, control my attitude, my words, etc. I'm really upset with the way my new boss is behaving. So I make it down the hallway, up the flight of stairs, and I can see his doorway. As I approach, I see that he is sitting at a table that seats 8, and he is pointing to the seat he wants me to sit in right beside him. I'm already nervous. I set my things down and begin to look up at him, and he's motionless, eyes wide open, eyes peering, his solid black eyes."
Her boss is a black-eyed person?
Yeah, it says, "I mean, solid black, no white at all. Just unblinking, piercing eyes looking into mine. I froze. Nobody else around to see this. Instant dread and the sense of pure evil came over me. I could barely speak. But I mumbled some of my issues and as quick as possible left his office. I've always noticed he had a weird thing with blinking and his hands. Almost like he would long blink while controlling his hands in front of groups of people. Not the case when I was in his office. Completely creepy. His eyes were normally a blue-gray, not black with no white at all." So,
Her boss is a demon.
A demon is what it sounds like. It makes me think of the movie Constantine.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like you got to see a little peek. And, you know, like you and I have discussed in the past about people that have that ability, right? Have the ability to sense these things and see these things. And it's almost like the people that do seem to be able to see and sense more of it than others. You know, not just like they don't just see odd things, but it's like they can tell it all the time. Like they're tuned to that frequency, unlike you and I. So I think that maybe she got to see behind the veil.
Yeah, I mean,
at least it feels that way.
And if your boss is telling you where to sit down in the meeting and he has solid black eyes, I would listen.
And you're the only one in the room.
Yeah, I'd listen.
Yeah, what is the other, it's another, oddly enough, Keanu Reeves, where he's a lawyer, and Al Pacino.
Is that the devil's advocate?
That's it. That's another one that you kind of think of, is Al Pacino. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because remember, he's kind of onto him, and Al Pacino knows, and he's just like, yeah, he knows who I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I get.
Speaking of Al Pacino, I just finished watching Hunters on Amazon.
Oh, is that
about the Nazi hunters in the 70s?
Oh, the whole series is out?
Yeah, it's out.
Was it good? Cool.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it didn't get the best ratings, and it's kind of odd, but I liked it. I think you would enjoy it.
That's cool. Just before you were telling those stories of the black-eyed kids, you had mentioned The Predator.
Yeah.
And recently, I got some more Glimmer Man sightings from some of our listeners, and I went ahead and forwarded them over to Lon, and he's posted them on his website, but they were sent to us first. And so check this out. This first one comes from a guy named James. I think you're going to like this because he too is a hunter. He says, hey guys, I'm a big fan of your show and have been a loyal listener for about 4.5 years now. I like how the two of you bring forth the information in a fun and informative way, yet never judge anyone about their personal sightings or encounters. I guess that's why I don't mind coming forward now about the strange encounter I had years ago in Georgia. You guys ask at the end of every show if you have any sightings, stories, or encounters that you would like to share. Please email the show, so that's what I'm doing. I've thought about emailing you my encounter right after I first started listening, but I always talked myself out of it, thinking you would probably just think that I was making it all up. But more and more I listened to the show, and the more and more I felt like sharing. Now, one of the main reasons I didn't email sooner is because my sighting didn't really fit into anything you guys cover on the show, meaning it wasn't a ghost or an alien or Sasquatch or fae folk. My sighting didn't really fit into a category. That is, until you guys did an episode on the Glimmer Man. When I heard that show, my jaw dropped. I must have listened to that episode 8 times in a row. I couldn't believe how similar it was to my own encounter. I couldn't believe that there were others out there who have witnessed the same thing I have. After hearing it multiple times, I now felt compelled to email you guys. This was something I had to share. Mind you, I've only told my brother and my wife about this encounter, and it took place 41 years ago, so here it is. It was the fall of 1978, deer season in particular. I lived near a very small town called Sucus, Georgia. It only has a population at the time of around 1,000 people. It is in the southeast end of the Chattahoochee National Forest. I'm an avid hunter, and I was hunting on public land in the National Forest just up the road from Sucus in an area called Cooper's Creek. I'd scouted out the area during the summer, so it was probably late July or early August. And at that time, I knew where all of the game trails were. I knew where water was located, which happens to be a small creek known as Bryant Creek. And I knew where all of the ridges and gaps were. I've hunted in and around this area for years and was very familiar with the area. When I finally located a good spot, or at least a spot I thought would give me a good chance at a large buck, I set up my lock-on tree stand in a tree about 12 feet off of the ground. I trimmed the branches to give me some shooting lanes and was basically all set for deer season. Oh, I was hunting with a 12-gauge shotgun. Rifle hunting was not allowed in the area. So fast forward to around November. I'd been hunting out of my tree stand about 6 times by the time this particular hunt happened. It was late afternoon, around 4:15 p.m. I wanted to get there earlier, but work held me up. We had hired this new kid named Ryan, and he was slowing me down all week. Anyways, this was a Friday. I finished up at work, jumped in my truck, and headed out to my hunting spot. Now, this was my normal routine for a Friday afternoon during deer season, and my wife knew that I would not be home till around 8:30, and even later if I happened to bag something. I parked my truck at the trailhead and started hiking into the woods to find my tree stand. The walk normally took about 15 to 20 minutes. You want to walk pretty quickly, but you don't want to run. You don't want to make too much noise moving through the woods. You don't want to spook any of the wildlife. As I was walking to my stand, the first thing I noticed was how quiet it was. I mean, very quiet. I didn't hear any of the normal chirping or singing of birds, no insects, nothing. Only a slight breeze. I thought it was a bit strange, but continued on to my deer stand. I finally arrived and climbed up and settled in. Once I was comfortable, I jacked around into the chamber, put the safety on my shotgun, and began surveying the surroundings, looking for anything out of place. Sometimes deer will bed down during the day. You can spot their antlers or ears above the tall grass and underbrush. As I was doing this, I began to have this ominous feeling that someone was watching me. I don't really know how to explain it, other than I had this deep feeling deep within me, in my core, in my gut. Something wasn't right. Well, I tried to ignore it for a while, telling myself to stop being such a coward. There's nothing out here but you, some deer hopefully, some squirrels, skunks, and other little critters. As time passed, the feeling only intensified. At this point, I kept looking at my watch, wondering how much time I had until dusk. I was thinking to myself, should I leave early? I was arguing with myself, of course not. A huge deer was probably only moments away. As I was sitting there arguing with myself, I caught movement to my right side in the trees. I slowly turned my head and began looking through the tree canopy, and that's when I saw it. This is the part that still gives me chills. Even writing this now freaks me out because I honestly don't know what I saw. As I was staring into the trees, I saw what looked like a large bodybuilder, but completely blurry. It was moving through the trees. I could clearly see the outline of the figure, but the rest was blurry, like I couldn't focus on it. It looked like a clear gelatinous blob, but in the shape of a human, a large human. And whenever it would stop, I would completely lose sight of it. It blended into its background perfectly. I just watched it for what seemed like an eternity, but in actuality, it was more like 15 minutes. It moved through the trees effortlessly, like a monkey or squirrel. It never really looked at me while I was watching it. Maybe it was before, and that's why I got the feeling someone was watching me. I don't know. It slowly moved off, and about this time, I was scared and thinking about my walk back to my truck. So I waited in the stand for another 30 minutes. It was getting dark now, and I slowly climbed out of my stand. Now, once I hit solid ground, I wasted no time. I sprinted all the way back to my truck. I jumped into the cab of my trusty Ford pickup, and my lungs were on fire. That was the farthest and fastest I've run since basic training back in 1967. I just sat there in my truck and tried to regain my breath. I drove home and said nothing to my wife or anyone else for a few weeks. As time passed, I tried to convince myself that I imagined it all, that I must have dozed off in the stand and had some sort of dream. But I couldn't get the idea of that thing out of my head. So I broke down and told my wife over dinner one night. She just listened and said it probably was my imagination. I later told my brother, who said something similar, along the same lines. I never told anyone else, and I never hunted in those same woods again. I never even went back for the tree stand. It was only like $300, and I didn't want to go back there again. Not for a measly $300. I took a break from hunting for about 10 years, and then started up again, but not in the same area. I still wonder what I saw that day. I have no rational explanation. Later, in 1988 or so, I saw the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie The Predator. I couldn't believe it. When I saw it, I jumped up and yelled at my wife, "That's what I saw! That looks just like it!" I don't know if the writer had a similar experience as mine, and that's what inspired him to make the Predator cloak the way it did in the movie. Or perhaps he heard some other eyewitness account. But that's almost exactly what I saw in the woods in northern Georgia in the fall of 1978. Mind you, not the reptilian-looking beast with lasers, but the cloaked part. Like I stated previously, I thought I was alone until you did the episode on the Glimmer Man. I now realize that others have seen it too. I don't know if that makes me feel better or worse. Anyways, that's my story. I hope you liked it. Take care and keep researching the Glimmer Man. I would love to hear more. Your loyal listener, James. So what do you think of that story? You got to have your mic
on. I muted it off over here because I'm over here clicking. I'm like, there's no way. That is so creepy. But look, it holds completely true to the stories that we've done. It's something that it's almost like it knows hunters. Like hunters are seeing this thing. It's out there with them. It does. You know what though? Like at first I was thinking that maybe it was a, I'm trying to think about how to word. Maybe it was a technology that we used in like military wise, right? Mm-hmm. Or like maybe some of our black projects we're using or something like that. But now given with it, the longer it goes, I don't believe it is.
I'm with you. Simply based on the movement. Just yes. Say if somebody gave you some amazing freaking first light camo that had the ability to cloak itself, mm-hmm. it wouldn't make you be able to glide through the treetops or tree canopies effortlessly.
No.
You would just be cloaked, right?
Yeah.
But so many of these stories talk about how it moves through the trees quickly. And, he indicated in his story that he's not even sure that it saw him. He had the feeling of something watching him, but he never actually saw it look at him. You know what I mean? Like yes. He just kind of caught this thing going through the woods and was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously he was frightened enough to where he didn't want to go hunting in that area again. I don't blame him. Didn't even go back for his tree stand. He's like, forget it. It's not worth it. He quit hunting for like 10 years, he says. Eventually started taking it up again and hunts to this now, but until he had seen the movie, like he really didn't tell anybody. He didn't know what it was. I mean, even now he talks about like, he still doesn't really know what he saw.
He just knows that that's what it looked like whenever that it matched the Predator.
And I like how in the beginning of his story, he talked about wanting to tell us the story for years, but just not ever pulling the trigger until we did an episode on the Glimmer Man, and then he had that eureka moment, like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Other people have seen what I've seen.
Yeah. It's so wild.
We've got more.
What's crazy is, like, it's... I look at it two ways. What's wild to me is like this, is like it's finally started becoming, I wouldn't say more popular, but more and more people are coming forward that are saying like, I saw something. But you have to think about this. This Glimmer Man sightings explains a lot. And what I mean by that is when you think you see something, or maybe it's, oh, I get that feeling of dread or of danger, but there's nothing around. Maybe there was.
Yeah, they've proven maybe that those in science. Things,
yes, they have. So maybe that kind of stuff, like it's real. It's there. You're dealing with it now. And it's out there. You just can't see it because if it's not moving, and whether it's in a tree or on the ground, and you are hiding with that kind of camouflage ability, you're not going to notice it just glancing out there.
He even mentions he could see it when it was moving, but when it would quit moving, he completely lost sight of it.
Yeah.
How many times, just personally, have you been in the woods hunting and you get a weird feeling or just a feeling, and just within seconds of having that feeling, game shows up? Almost like you can perceive it.
Yeah.
Like you don't even conscious that you're perceiving it. You just feel something. You'll look to your left and sure enough, a deer will come out.
Yep.
You're like, man, it's spooky. You're like, I don't know how I knew. Was it luck? But this happens so often to me that it's not, I don't feel that it's a coincidence.
What about what happened that you and I really didn't, we never really shared it. What happened in Arizona was the same thing as we're talking about. Is remember the first two nights we were there, it was silence. There was no birds.
Yeah, were really strange.
No howling. We weren't seeing anything. Like where we got back into, it was legitly like that Oz effect where there's nothing. Like just complete and utter silence in that whole area. And that's, you know, we started seeing more people, but like we didn't hear any wildlife at all. And I remember, you know, you were like, where's the birds? And I didn't even notice it until that next day when you brought it up. Is that a whole first day we were there and getting camp set up and glassing and scouting? And when the next day we're like, yeah, there's not even any birds where
no
we're
chipmunks,
at.
No,
there's
no
nothing.
Cows.
We weren't seeing anything.
Coyotes. Yeah. Like it was literally void of any sound.
Total silence. It's very, very odd.
I thought it was bizarre.
Yeah.
And if this story sounds familiar to you, if it probably is if you're an Elite member. I just read this story on a recent Elite episode, and I've got another one here that I read on that Elite episode, and I'm going to read that now for the people here on the free show. Check this out. This is another Glimmer Man sighting. It says, hello, Cam and Kyle. I'm a big fan of Expanded Perspectives, and I've been enjoying your show for a few years now. I tell everyone I know who is into the paranormal to check out your show. It's one of the best out there. Anyway, my name is Mallory, and I would like to share with you a terrifying experience I had back in 2002 while I was in college. Now, back then, I was in my second year at the University of Florida and was living in an apartment with a girlfriend of mine, also a fellow student, in the city of Gainesville, Florida. We lived the typical college life. We went to class most of the time, studied, hung out with friends, and would attend occasional parties on the weekends. We were two broke college girls, so we didn't really have the funds that a lot of our friends did. So whenever we had free time, we would look for things to do that didn't cost much. We would go to the movies or go bowling, local flea markets, yard sales, and of course hiking in some of the local parks. This was one of my favorite activities. I love the outdoors. And besides, it's great exercise. We had a dog named Toby. He was a golden retriever and has since passed away. But back then, he was a great and loving dog who loved to hike with me. So we went a lot, probably like 3 times a week. Anyway, our favorite spot to hike was the Gainesville Hawthorne State Trail. It wasn't that far away, and it was like a 16-mile hike if you did the whole thing. We only did that like 3 times. Most of the time, we would hike around 5 miles. It's a beautiful trail with lots of trees covered in Spanish moss, swamps, and wildlife. Some of the trails are paved, and there are bridges, observation decks, and loads of cool things to see. The woods are very thick and dense, and once off trail, you can only see about 35 yards into the woods. Well, on this particular day, me and Toby were about 4 miles into the trail. It was a weekday around 11 a.m., so there were very few people out there. At the time of our encounter, there was no one around, just me and Toby. As we were walking, I was just looking around as we hiked, you know, looking for wildlife, enjoying the sun, and all that Mother Nature has to offer, when all of a sudden, Toby froze. He saw something. He just stood there with his ears perked up. His tail was sticking straight out, and he was staring into the trees. I assumed he probably saw some birds or something else in the trees. So I asked him, "What do you see, Toby? What is it, boy?" He didn't bark, but I could tell something had caught his attention. While he continued to stare, I started looking in the same direction as he was, trying to see what he was looking at. Now, at this point, Toby's demeanor started to change. His tail went from sticking straight out to now lower between his legs. He began to whimper a little and started pulling on the leash like he wanted out of there. I continued to look into the trees, trying to spot whatever was scaring him. And that's when I saw it. It's very hard to describe, but this thing looked clear, but not quite. It was in the shape of a human, meaning that this thing had a head, a torso, 2 arms, and 2 legs, but was see-through. The thing that stood out the most was the glowing yellow eyes. That was the only thing that wasn't clear. As crazy as it sounds, this thing looked like an alien in the Predator movies, whatever it is cloaking itself. It was standing on a large tree branch, hanging on by its right arm, and was looking directly at me and Toby. It slowly began to crouch down, and it looked like it tried to hide behind the trunk of the tree. like it noticed us noticing him. I don't know why I say him. I absolutely have no idea the sex of this strange creature, if that's what you want to call it. It tried to hide, like I said, but you could still see portions of it behind the tree. I was frozen. I was mesmerized by this thing. I was just staring at it, trying to figure out what it was. I didn't want to take my eyes off of it in fear that I might lose sight of it. This thing was so damn camouflage. If I looked away, I might not even be able to find it again. So I just stared, ignoring Toby and his whimpers. Then it moved. It swung through the trees effortlessly and made almost no sound. It would move to a few trees and then freeze, look back at us, I guess to determine if we were still watching it or not. I got the feeling that this thing did not want to be seen. It would move, then freeze, crouch down, and put itself between us and the tree it was in. It would sit there for a few minutes and then move again. I wanted to follow it, but everything in my body said no. So I just watched it, and it eventually disappeared into the forest. Toby and I jogged back to the car, and I never told anyone about what we saw. Now, to this day, I don't know what we witnessed. Was it an alien? Or was it something else? I don't know. I was scared the day it happened, but at the same time, elated. Toby and I went back there numerous times, and I'm not going to lie. I hoped to see it again, but I never did. I thought that I was the only one who had this type of encounter until I heard you guys covering the Glimmer Man. I saw it. I saw the Glimmer Man. I now tell everyone who will listen. Of course, some people think I'm crazy, but I don't care. I feel lucky that I have gotten to have an experience with the paranormal, with the unknown. I think the universe is way more complex than we think, and that there are things out there we can't explain, and that's okay. I like it that way. Thanks for your wonderful show, your friend, Mallory. So, this is email that's kind of different than the ones we normally get.
Mm-hmm.
She said she seemed terrified the day it happened, but at the same time, she was excited by it, and actually, when she would go back, would hope to see it again, but never did. There's kind of like two camps. We've talked about that mm-hmm. before. Some people see Sasquatch and are terrified. They give up hunting. They never go in the woods. They never camp again. They're done. They're not going to go back. Other people have a run in with a strange encounter with Sasquatch, like Mike Mays and other people, and then they focus on going back to the woods. Like, they want to find it. They yes. want to see what they saw again. I think Mallory fits in that second category. She wanted to follow it. Everything in her body, including her dog, was saying, no, we shouldn't follow it. She didn't that day, but has since not only wanted to see it again, but like she's embraced it. Now she tells everybody. She doesn't care if you think she's crazy or not.
Yeah.
She's accepted it. If you were, I guess it would be determined upon what your experience was. But I like how in the first story, James says that he doesn't think the Glimmer Man saw him.
Yeah.
But in Mallory's story, it clearly saw her because she said it would move and then it would look back at her, like kind of crouched down, trying to put the tree in between and would freeze. And
which
then
is
a few minutes move again. Like this thing didn't, it knew that she saw it. And it
even though it's invisible, even though it has all, it's still.
Yeah, not completely.
Which makes you feel more like the way it's acting is more Bigfoot-esque is the way it acts.
Well,
the way it's tree peeking, the way it's trying not to be seen by, you know, using even physical. Instead of just getting still or lying down and completely vanishing, it's physically using things to put in between it and the person viewing it.
And that's what you mentioned is a theory. People have talked about yeah. this is a Sasquatch possesses
an adaptation.
It possesses lots of abilities. People are talk about infrasound and how Sasquatch can read your thoughts and how.
Well, that's what Pat even brought up with the infrasound thing and all that, with the smells. And, you know, he brought up a bunch of stuff with the Elkins Creek when we were discussing yeah. it.
People have all these theories. And
because we don't know.
We don't know. And that's why I think it's silly when certain people will scoff at it. Like, oh, that's crazy. It can't do that. Well,
yeah.
How do you know? Like we talked about earlier, what if Sasquatch is from another planet, flies around in a UFO, it cloaks itself and steals squash?
Right,
maybe exactly. That's what's happening.
That's right. Maybe it's not meant to be Sasquatch. Maybe the actual terminology is Sasquatch, and that was to mean like the stealer of squash.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe the interpretation of the first Native American who uttered the word Sasquatch, the interpreter got it wrong.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Like,
and they're like, it's not a big deal. This big furry thing comes around and steals squash.
Yeah, it just steals out of our garden. And then we've been out there, and it's just slowly progressed into worse and worse things.
Well, that's what people need to try out, these gifting
trees. And we
don't
have enough gardens. We need to have more gardens.
Now we do.
For more Sasquatch.
I've heard people talk about that before. It's like, if you look around at all the cities or all your houses, people have flower beds, but everybody's growing stuff that's inedible.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make more sense on every median? You were growing fruit and vegetables, and every flower bed you had fruits and vegetables?
Yes, it would. I'm actually starting my garden this weekend.
Well, if you have a Sasquatch habituation site, instead of offering on the gifting tree shells or
candy
or an apple, try squash.
Yellow squash?
All kinds. Zucchini's a type of squash, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believe so.
I believe it's part of the squash family.
I like zucchini. I like squash.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Anyways, if you have any more sightings of Glimmer Man, please send them to the show. We're actually trying to compile a list of sightings like that are unusual to use one day. And that would be awesome. If you have any sightings of anything else you'd like to share with us, same thing. Email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Cam, what do you got planned for your week?
Oh, hard work, clean living, baby.
You know me.
You're all fired up for the fights this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting. I'm not going to lie. Stylebender versus Yoel Romero.
Yoel. You taking Yoel, or are you going to take?
Yeah, I'm going to take Yoel.
All right.
There's something.
I'll take Stylebender, and whoever loses, the winner gets to smack him in the knuckles with a ruler.
Nah, I'm not agreeing to that.
Come on, we're doing that.
I'm not agreeing to that. I just, I don't know.
You have to take a shot of buttermilk.
A shot.
Dude, I will throw up thinking about it.
Sounds bad. Well, Everybody out there, please, for God's sakes, be careful. Until next week, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Wash your hands, folks. Peace.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.